Hey everybody, welcome back to the Memories of Dallas show, part of the Memories Inc. network of shows. This is a show where we talk about all the people, places, and things related to Big D, Dallas, Texas. I'm your host, Chris Daly, and today I have a special treat for you. As Executive Director of Memories Inc., Paul Heckman sat down for an interview with standout offensive lineman for the Dallas Cowboys, John Nyland. Memories of Dallas is made possible through the generous support of Tooth Acres Pet Care Center. Tooth Acres is located in Carrollton, Texas at 1639 Parker Road. Tooth Acres Pet Care Center provides the finest indoor and outdoor boarding environment for your pet. With over 45 years of experience, the Clem family has created and maintained the highest level of excellence in the pet care industry. And they do it because they're pet owners too. For all your boarding needs, choose Tooth Acres. Tooth Acres offers cat and dog boarding as well as cremation and burial. You can reach them on the phone at 972-492-3711 or go to toothacres.com. And when you go, be sure to thank Lori Clem and the entire staff at Tooth Acres for supporting Memories of Dallas.
Hey, John, I just want to talk to you a little bit about your time basically with the Cowboys, but a little before and after, too. I know that you had about 11 years as a pro back in the days when cleats and chin straps were being sharpened, and if anybody saw your hand sticking out in a pile, it was going to get crunched. Yeah. Before we get into the blood and guts parts of that, let's begin at the beginning. I see that you were born in Quincy, Mass., but grew up in New York. How did that happen?
I was adopted.
Oh, you were adopted, okay. All right.
Yeah, I was born in Quincy, Massachusetts.
I see.
And the family, at that time, they weren't married, so they put me up for adoption.
I see.
And a friend of theirs that worked together adopted me.
I see. Okay. I was also adopted, so I share that with you. What did your adopted mom and dad do for a living?
Mom was working at the hospital as an orderly, and my dad was a bartender.
He was a bartender. Okay. All right.
Yeah, he ran the bar. He ran the bar. What a combination.
So I read that he kept doing odd jobs also to pay the bills.
They did odd jobs together.
Yeah, I see. Okay. The other thing I read was that you kind of grew up on the wrong side of the tracks.
I literally grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. The railroad station ran right in front of our house.
So
depending on your preference, we literally lived on the railroad tracks. It was actually the street called Railroad Avenue.
Railroad Avenue, pretty rough place.
Not there, but North Dallas. I mean, North Amityville was kind of a rough neighborhood.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, you played your high school ball at Amityville High School. Did you play any other sports there?
I played basketball, I played baseball, and I played football.
Okay.
That's all we had time for.
Yeah, it sounds like it, yeah. Now, you had a pretty famous high school coach in Lou Howard. Tell me about him.
Yeah, Lou Howard was probably the Tom Landry of that era in high school football. He had an outstanding record. Just an outstanding coach, and he knew how to promote and motivate you.
Okay, all right, good. Now, who all recruited you out of high school?
Oh gosh, almost there's two dozen teams, but the main ones were Notre Dame, Iowa, Syracuse, Stanford, Michigan State. Now, you name it, I got scholarships there.
Wow. Now, Iowa against Notre Dame, how did that happen? Why did you choose Iowa?
Well, at the time I was a Catholic, but I wasn't a very good Catholic, and therefore I didn't want to go to a Catholic school. I didn't want that religion being forced on me. And so consequently, I didn't choose there, but I chose Iowa because it was close enough. It's they treated me very well at Iowa.
Uh-huh. Okay. What was your major there at Iowa?
To stay eligible.
I'm sorry?
To stay eligible.
Oh, SCOPRO.
Yeah. I was going to say, I didn't have a lot of excitement as far as going to college, although I thought what I would be is maybe, I just wanted to graduate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, I know SCOPRO very well, so I can feel for you there in part. Hey, listen, I know from interviewing Charlie Waters, there's a bit of recruiting, even in the pros back then. During that time, of course, we had the AFL-NFL wars.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that. I think the Jets took you also, didn't they, beside the Cowboys?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Or Oakland. Oakland drafted me, but the Jets called me. The Jets wanted me to go. They wanted me to, because I was a New York kid.
Uh-huh.
They thought maybe trying to influence me to go back to New York, which I was interested in doing.
Uh-huh.
So I said to them, I said, well, if I don't get drafted in the NFL, I'd be more than happy to, you know, because the NFL was the lead cow back in those days. You know, they're the ones doing everything.
Oh, yeah.
And so consequently, I said, yeah, I'm open to suggestions, but if I got drafted today by Dallas or by the NFL, I would probably go there.
Yeah.
And I told them flat out, upright, you know. So they didn't draft me number one. They were going to draft me number one. They ended up drafting me number five.
I see. And then the Eagles wanted you too, I understand.
I didn't think they did. I didn't know the Eagles even existed until they called me. You know, I mean, I knew they existed, but what I'm getting at is that I wasn't aware of the fact that they were looking at me as well.
Right. Okay. So you get to Dallas in your first round pick. Were you expected to start right away?
I was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I expected me to start right away.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And they just kind of coached me along, and finally I got to start about the third game into the season, and about the seventh game into the season I got hurt.
Oh.
So it's unfortunate, but. You know, just dumb things that you just look at and say, well, that changed my life.
Mm.
But it changed my life. In my case, it changed it for the good, because now I was very hell-bent on you know, getting a starting position the following year in training camp. I was prepared to make the team.
Right.
And so you just don't come out and say, okay, I'm number one, you're number two, number three. They just kind of leave you alone and find out which way you're floating.
Yeah.
And I was floating towards the starting position.
Oh, man. Okay. Now, that would have been what year?
65.
Okay.
Or 66. 66 was the first playing year.
I see. Okay. All right. Now, you got through a rookie year, and then all of a sudden you get to play in what was the biggest NFL game at that time, the NFL Championship, facing the Packers in -13 degree weather.
Isn't that wonderful?
I got to hear the story about this.
game should never have been played.
And I heard that they watered down the field before the night before the game.
They did.
Now,
they did.
Go figure. did they think you guys were ice skaters?
Well, it kind of surprised me, because they used to water the field down every night.
Uh-huh.
But this was going to be a cold night.
Yeah.
And nobody really knew how cold it was going to be until they decided, well, if we can't get the equipment out, it's going to freeze. And so they just left it on there and didn't try to dry it or anything.
Wow. So all your years in New York, Massachusetts, and Iowa, I guess they didn't prepare you for that.
For sure.
Just the longest cleat you ever had.
For sure.
Okay. Now, during the offensive lines of your early years, you had like Ralph Neely, Tony Licio, Big Cat. At the offensive tackles, you had Leon Donahue and John Wilbert at offensive guards. And then, of course, you had Malcolm Walker and Dave Manders at center. Tell me about some of these guys.
Well, I was a rookie amongst the whole group. Everybody you mentioned there came in had been there a year or two. Uh-huh. And so I was a rookie, and I was kind of listening to what the veterans were saying. Uh-huh. You know, it was kind of the, it's kind of like saying, you know, how well did you want to play or how bad do you want to play? I want to play pretty bad. Well, then you follow this guy here. You watch what he does. Uh-huh. And when he makes a mistake, you learn from it. So consequently, you know, it was more than just muscle and bone. It was really kind of, if you want a commitment, you better start with your brain.
That kind of,
you better start with your emotions. You know, your emotions and your brain. Your brain's going to learn the game.
Yeah.
But your emotions going to get you past the snap count.
And you look across the line, and there's Jethro Pugh and Bob Lilly and Larry Cole, George Andre,
yeah.
People like that. Now, who is the toughest to handle in, say, a bull rush?
A bull rush?
Yeah.
Oh, probably. Well, Lilly wasn't a bull rush kind of guy. He was kind of a finesse guy. But Jethro Pugh was pretty tough to block.
Oh man. Oh yeah.
He was so big, so tall.
And you had to plant your feet and dig in. Yeah, absolutely. So Bob Lilly was probably the toughest, and it went into twists and stuff like that, I would imagine.
Exactly. You must have watched the films.
Yeah, I have watched the film. I did a lot of watching the films and homework here. you had the funniest cast of characters maybe ever on a football team. You had Don Meredith, Dwayne Thomas, Lance Rensel, Mike Ditka, Pete Gent. I mean, you could write a book about it. Oh wait.
About everybody.
What's
everybody,
that?
Everybody. What a bunch of characters.
Oh, my gosh. Now, yeah, but, of course, there's only one guy that was named Johnny Nightlife.
That's true. And he was a character as well.
Tell me
sounds
about...
Like an, sounds like an embarrassing character, doesn't it?
Yeah. Now, tell me, how in the world did you get that name?
Well, I was late for practice. And I had to... you know, when you're late for practice, you have to report to the coach.
Oh, boy.
You just don't go in and warm up.
Oh, my
God. So I had to go in and report to the coach that I was late.
Uh-huh.
And it only happened once or twice, but, you know, that's enough to change your cat attitude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kind of like Jimmy Johnson and the asthma fail thing. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So who, when you went out at night, who were your wingmen usually? Did you have
when I went out at night?
Yeah. When you went out to any clubs or anything like that?
Yeah, I was there's a couple of guys who went with me.
Uh-huh.
Dwayne Thomas from time to time, and the offensive line is a group we go out.
Uh-huh.
And celebrate, or we go out and just cry our shoulders.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much the offensive line group you mentioned.
Okay. What clubs would you go to? A restaurant?
Oh, my gosh, they're all down there on Northwest Highway.
Okay.
Loop 12, I don't remember the name of the clubs.
Okay, all right.
Golden Parachute is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Brandy's.
Mm-hmm. So who's the most hilarious in the locker room, the biggest prankster?
Sometimes me and sometimes not. mostly people like Ralph Neely.
Really?
He would stir things up. Also Dave Manders. Dave would, you know, I mean, if we wanted to pull jokes on people, usually it was one of those two guys.
Yeah. They were the guys that put the atomic bomb in the jock.
Yeah, exactly right.
Speaking from experience here. So, who's your favorite Cowboy running back to block for?
Dwayne Thomas.
Because he hit the hole so quick?
He would use me. And he would let me lead the block.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times, you know, running backs don't want you to, didn't do a good job of leading blocks. But Dwayne did. He would set up the block for me, and that's what made me
uh-huh.
probably an all-pro. He made me an all-pro just by setting up the blocks.
Uh-huh. What would he, like sit behind you and wait until you drove a guy one way or the other?
Exactly. Yeah. And he'd have the option.
Yeah. Now, you came from a era of Tom Landry's kind of idiosyncrasies, in a manner of speaking. The most famous being, for you, being the offensive line hitch coming out of the huddle. You know, where you were getting to the line and had that little hitch before you went down into your position.
Right.
If memory serves, it was to camouflage what the backfield was doing. Is that correct?
That was correct.
Okay. Landry liked his offensive line light but fast. Now, I know you played about, what, 245, 250, didn't you?
Most of them. That's correct.
Now, what would happen when you went up against the Roger Brown of the day, who was, Roger was about 300 pounds?
Scared to death? but full of piss and vinegar, if you want to know what that means.
Yes.
Look it up.
Yeah.
But, I don't care how big they were. I was one big pain in the neck to them. I know that because I wouldn't give up.
Yeah.
I was the kind of guy that would block and block into the ground if I could.
Yeah, absolutely.
But,
absolutely.
You know, the bigger the guy, really, I enjoyed it. The bigger the guy, the better for me.
Yeah.
Because he usually didn't move as fast or as quick or had as many moves. You know, he just kind of power crushed you.
I think they were a lot more fatter than muscler in those days, the big guys, weren't they?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Now, what team, overall team, did you really hate to play?
Well, we played in the Eastern Division, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I hated playing people on the West Coast that we didn't see all the time. You know, Oakland. Maybe Oakland. We go to a scrimmage and played Oakland in a scrimmage. Well, they weren't in our division even, and so consequently, you know, anything we wanted to do, we had to practice on things that we had to practice on, and that was really kind of a benefit. But that was the team I had to play on because they were practicing us, and they were doing the same thing to us.
Wow!
You know, they were trying to figure out what we were doing.
I didn't realize that that would have been NFL versus AFL. So this is
exactly
after the Super Bowl time. Okay, all right. Okay, who was the worst personal matchup for you?
Roger Brown.
Okay.
You know, he was 350 pounds, and I'm here. I am 275. It was a tough go.
I had heard about it. Of course, he's all pro. He was all everything back in those days, too. You know.
Sure, he was.
Now, tell me about losing to the Colts in the Super Bowl and coming back to next year to win it all.
Well, you know, we lost it, and it seemed like on the plane going home after we lost, we were mentally gearing up for the next season because we know that we lost it, but we shouldn't have.
Right.
And so consequently, the season started out the next year in a much different attitude. We knew we were good. We knew we could make the playoffs. We knew we could win in the playoffs. Now we just had to do it.
Yeah. The ultimate game, as Dwayne called it.
Yeah, the ultimate game. That's why they play it every year. The ultimate game.
Dwayne was a character. He must have been something to play with.
Sure he was. Absolutely.
Okay, in 1972, you had a fumble recovery for a touchdown. As a long-suffering offensive guard, I can tell you those moments are cherished. Tell me about it.
The ball fell in my hands. I didn't do anything. The ball just fell right, perfect. And I got credit for it.
You got credit for it.
Well, you know, you kind of say, well, that's something that's kind of anticlimactic. You know, I got credit for it, but we shouldn't have fumbled the ball to begin with.
Uh-huh.
So it was anticlimactic. We did get to play. We did get the touchdown, but at the same time, it showed a weakness. It showed a weakness in our handoff system.
Yeah.
So we had to work on it.
But at least you got a touchdown. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I read a story where your 5'2" mom stood down the 6'2" Tom Landry when you guys were disembarking a bus. Can you tell me about that?
Who told you that? My wife.
No, it was in one of the stories I was reading.
Anyway, it's a true story. We pulled up to the stadium, and here was my mom and dad out there going, "Hey, is Johnny Nyland on that bus?" "Yes, he'll be off in a minute." Finally, I get off the bus. I hear her talking to Coach Landry. "Johnny Nyland, that's my son. And we come to watch him play today. You know, and here I'm getting off the bus." "Okay, Mom, that's enough. Go away." he was very cordial. He spent time with her.
Yeah.
And they got along fine.
What did you think about Tom Landry?
I didn't like him at first, only because he didn't communicate with me. I wanted someone who would communicate with me directly. He left it up to the offensive line coaches. And that's okay, but you know, you kind of want to feel what does the coach think of me? What's the head coach think about me?
Yeah.
And, you know, he welcomed me to the game, and that was about it. I didn't really talk to him much that whole year.
Yeah. Let's see here. So you guys had 9 seasons with the Cowboys. You only missed 2 games in 9 seasons with Dallas. Being your primary starter for him, you made 6 Pro Bowls, a couple of AP first team All Pro teams. I understand Dallas only recorded fewer than 100 yards rushing in 5 games during your prime career as a starter, and they did this with no Hall of Fame running backs. Now, then you left for Philly. Why in the world would they let you leave?
My name is Paul Heckman. I am the Executive Director of Memories Incorporated, an IRS-approved 501c3 nonprofit. A few years ago, we saw a niche for Facebook pages free of politics and created our first page, Memories of Dallas, which is now well over 30,000 members strong. We have expanded our Facebook pages to include Memories of Texas, Memories of Texas Football, and Memories of Texas Music. We also have actual web pages for memoriesofdallas.org, memoriesofTexas.org, memoriesofTexasFootball.org, and meminc.org, our mothership. We are working on additional web pages now. Please come see us.
Are you looking for a podcast network that talks Texas by Texans? Well, check us out. You're already listening to us, but go to the website, LoneStarPodcast.com. You can also find us on every big podcast platform, LSPN. We have shows in business, entertainment, marketing, music, of course, sports. We have some of the best sports podcasts in the state of Texas, ranging from high school football all the way up to pro basketball. So check us out online, LoneStarPodcast.com. That's the LSPN on every major podcast platform.
Fewer than 100 yards rushing in 5 games during your prime career as a starter, and they did this with no Hall of Fame running backs. Now, then you left for Philly. Why in the world would they let you leave?
They got Tony Hill, number one draft choice.
Oh, okay. All right. You went from a 10-win team with Tom Landry to a 4-win team with, I think it started with McCormick and then went to Vermeil. Is that correct?
Yeah, Dick Vermeil came in to coach.
Okay. All right. And in 1976, you ripped up your ligaments in your knees, and you went on IR. Is that the time you pretty much knew your career was over?
Yeah, you know, your body talks to you.
Yeah.
And when you start listening, then you play differently, too.
Yeah, I got
you.
I got you.
Once you get injured, you remember you're injured.
Right, right. Who are the friends you pretty much stayed in touch with the most off the team?
Dwayne Thomas lives up in Detroit somewhere, I believe. Uh-huh. But he and I talk infrequently.
Okay.
Not too many of the players that I played with do I see or hear about. Now, we'll have a reunion every once in a while.
Right.
We have get-togethers. I see Walt Garrison and, you know, it's Tony Lisio and Ray Fieldwright, and you mentioned him.
Right, right, right. I think Tony, he passed away, didn't he?
Tony did, yeah, he did.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he did pass away, but you were saying who I was friends with after
I left
the scene.
Okay. Now, I did notice reading that you did some military duty at Fort Hood.
I did.
Tell me about that. Were you drafted?
I volunteered. I volunteered because if you got drafted, you didn't know where you're going. If you volunteered, they'll send you to Texas. And, of course, I was looking all forward to getting back in time for the off season.
Yeah.
So therefore, I wanted to stay here.
So your football life is over. You're kind of looking forward to what comes next. You kind of entered a pretty dark period in your life, it looks like, in the 80s.
My life changed. You're right. It did change. I just decided, well, life is kind of tough for me, at least. And my body was talking to me. It hurt a lot.
Yeah.
And so overall, I was changing. I knew I was changing, and I better take advantage of whatever situation came up. So it turned out that it was a guy that was offering me a job, and I was looking forward to it.
Right.
But it turned out that when I retired, I just retired. Didn't tell anybody.
Oh.
And finally, the team called me, and I said, oh, I think I'm retired now.
Oh, boy. Now, you went through some really rough times in 1980, late 80s, too, also. There was some information about a false data on a $300,000 loan, and you were actually sentenced to 2 years in a federal prison camp. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Well, first of all, they sent me there. I got there because, you know, I don't know the details, because I kind of forgot about all that stuff. But, you know, they wanted me to do something. They were trying. Yeah, my lawyer didn't remind me. They were trying to take our house.
I see.
We had a house invested, and to steal it from us. And they said the only way you're going to stop it is to file bankruptcy. And in fact, we did. We stopped the sale.
Okay.
And we stopped, you know, basically it was just to salvage the house.
I see.
That's what there was nothing more. No, there was nothing fancy about it. I was recommended by my attorney. We never fell back with it unless my attorney suggested it.
Uh-huh.
And he did, and it worked out fine. I got my house back.
Yeah.
But I spent 6 months at the federal prison camp. That was fun.
Oh, yeah, I bet it was. Playing volleyball with the guys, yeah.
Well, we did have a volleyball team. I think about it.
Well, at least it was federal. It wasn't state. You know, that's one good
that's
thing
good.
About it.
That's for sure.
Okay, now all of a sudden you get out and you realize you actually had a bigger support around you of ex-Cowboys. And you really found your faith, it seems.
Yes, I did.
Who was your biggest supporter at that time?
Coach Landry.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Did he reach out to you, or did you reach out to him?
No, he reached out to me. He reached out to me, and he brought me in, and we had a conversation.
Uh-huh.
You know, I told him what happened.
Yeah.
And he's very supportive.
Right. Same thing happened to Thomas Henderson. You know, Coach Landry reached out to him, too. Same way.
Sure. Yeah. He did. He was good about that. I mean, Landry knew how to handle people.
Yeah. So you got out of here. You found your faith. You're back in touch with some of your Cowboy teammates. But you got to make a living. What do you start doing?
I was at that time involved in television,
okay.
And I was selling advertising, television advertising. And back when the UHF channels were trying to make a living,
yeah.
I went to work for the local television station that opened up in Dallas called Channel 39.
Okay.
And I was just basically a salesman. That's all it was. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
And I was pretty good at it.
So tell me a little bit about Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
Well, they reached out to me because of the story that you just heard a few minutes ago.
Right.
They reached out to me, and I have to admit, when I went there, I didn't know what to think. But after having conversations with one of the players, one of the attendees, I decided that, you know, I had given my life to Christ many, many years ago.
Wow.
And so consequently, I just decided at that point, the Lord's going to have to take care of me because I can't take care of myself. I prayed and I accepted the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I simply asked him to just come into my life and take it over.
Yeah.
And he did, and he did today, and he did yesterday, and he did the day before. So he's in my life on a daily basis.
There you go. Well, you know, I don't have a whole lot else for you here, but I want to thank Sean so much for putting this all together. Okay.
Paul, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling. I really mean that. Thank you.
Hey, I want to thank Paul Heckman for sharing that meeting he had. As always, we have to thank our sponsors, Tooth Acres Pet Care Center. For all your boarding needs, choose Tooth Acres, because Tooth Acres cares. Hey, and I also want to thank you, the listener, for giving us your time and attention. Share these shows out on all your social media and help us preserve memories of Dallas. Until next time, I'm your host, Chris Daly, reminding you that the best thing about memories is making them. So go out and make some memories.